Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. This is Erica Adler. I'm a shareholder at Retzel and Andrus and head of our healthcare practice. Today on the Health Law Hotspot, we're really excited to have Chad Bestie with us. Chad is a partner with BDO's Healthcare Advisory Practice and a member of the BDO Center for Healthcare Excellence and Innovation. He has over 30 years of healthcare insurance, operational, and financial management experience and provides organizations strategy, implementation, turnaround, and M&A services. So welcome, Chad. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I am very excited because today we're going to talk about a topic that's near and dear to my heart. And I know you and I have known each other for many years and we have many of the same kind of clients. So today what we're going to talk about are the independent physician practice and the important role that they play in healthcare in this country. And you and I have worked with hundreds, you probably have worked with even more than I have over the past 20, 25 years. We've seen changes in the industry. We've seen practices that have been around for decades. And we've seen, you know, brand new practices. There's always practices, and I believe there always will continue to be practices. But maybe you can start off by speaking to some of the trends you've seen in healthcare as it relates to the role that practices play in healthcare today.
Okay, thank you, Erica. What I'd start by saying is or preface this by saying that it seems for the last 10 to 15 years that folks, experts have been predicting the end of private practice. You know, and we've certainly seen trends where more and more physicians are working for, you know, hospitals. And in 2021, we have a very significant trend of more and more selling their practices into, you know, private equity. But, you know, as you know, Erica, physicians tend to prefer to practice, you know, in smaller practices where they feel it's a practice rather than a business. And I don't ever see that changing. You know, will there be fewer doctors in private practice? I think so. Will the ones that are in private practice be successful? Actually, I think they may be among the most successful physicians because they can be more adaptable to changes in their environment. They can have better relationships with, say, senior hospital executives or other, you know, ASC, you know, operating companies and the like. And I just think that like we would have said 10 years ago or even 20 years ago, I think the future is still bright for private practice physicians.
I absolutely agree. So when I'm talking with doctors and they're trying to choose, you know, do I want to go to the hospital or do I want to go to the group? You know, one of the things they often focus on is, can they make as much money when they're working for a private practice? There seems to be a misconception that somehow they're going to do more, do better, or have long-term success with a hospital. And I think you and I both agree that every hospital is different and every group is different. Some are more successful than others. But what would you say overall are some of the things you see small practices doing today that are giving them kind of an edge when it comes to earning higher compensation? Are they just putting in, you know, twice as many hours, or are there other concepts that they're using?
I think we've reached the about the limits of working harder. You know, I think that, you know, that's been done largely for the last 20 years. I think most physicians are at the point where they really not have no desire to work harder, even if they have the capability. And so related, one of the things that I see coming for physician practices is it's really a trend being driven by the insurance companies. So late last year, Blue Cross Blue Shield announced in the Chicagoland that they were going to pay for select orthopedic procedures 15% more than their regular fee schedule if done in an ambulatory surgery center, and 15% less if done hospital, inpatient or outpatient. And so one of the things that I see that is going to come that is an opportunity for private practice physicians is going to be this site of service, trying to use an ambulatory surgery center whenever possible, trying to use LabCorp and Quest as an alternative to using the hospital for lab services or to a freestanding imaging center rather than to the hospital. And so I think that we're going to see insurance companies or payers play a little bit more active role in trying to enable physicians to stay in private practice and to discourage them, you know, to the extent they can, from going to work for hospitals. So I think that's one avenue. Another is frankly, it's ancillary services. You know, if we're in an environment where Medicare and the Blue Cross and all the other payers aren't paying more for services, the only way to make as much money, you know, next year as we did the year before is either by providing more services, or we have to, you know, kind of create an environment where we can provide more with, you know, the same amount of time. And ancillary services is a wonderful example. And so you have clients that are surgical by nature, and many of them may own a surgery center. Isn't it a really attractive thing for a practice to say, yeah, we own a surgery center, but the insurance company now incentivizes us to use it? They pay us more if we do the services at our surgery center than if we go to the hospital. So I think that also is going to be beneficial. The last thing, and I think this is something that we don't really understand yet, but I believe there is a certain percentage of patients that will always want a very kind of intimate relationship with their physicians. And I think that is just easier to accomplish in smaller practice settings.
So. I agree with you. I think that's really insightful. You know, there's in smaller practices, I often find that doctors are up on the latest technology and they can introduce things very quickly. They can pick up on trends and, you know, whether it's an ancillary or some other product they want to sell, they can bring it right in the door. One of the complaints I hear from my doctors who work at hospitals, for example, is with all the bureaucracy and red tape, you know, getting an idea or challenging the way compensation is computed or making a change that's meaningful can just be very hard to achieve. So some of that decision making is easier to do, of course, in a private business than it is at a big institution. Do you see hospitals are staying up to date as much as physician practices? Are they able to kind of pivot quickly and compete, or do doctors kind of have an edge sometimes on some of the newer technologies that are out there?
I actually think that in the next 5 to 10 years are going to be very challenging times for hospitals. So the positive news is they have a lot of capital. The negative side is that their services, the costs are too high. So, you know, we give an example of Blue Cross Blue Shield trying to provide an incentive to using a surgery center as opposed to a hospital outpatient surgery. And in some ways, the incentive is because it costs twice as less, you know, it costs twice as much at the hospital. And so I think we're going to see kind of new relationships that you know, come underway. And, you know, whether it's the surgery group kind of aligning more with the payer than with their local hospital. The only kind of advice I want to give people is in the long run, well, it is very common for physicians to hate the relationships with their, you know, hospital leaders. They have tend to be more benevolent than either on the payer or, you know, or other kind of sophisticated investors. So I'll say that it's not all dark on the hospital side in terms of relationships for physicians.
So you're making a really important point about the role that payers are playing in healthcare, you know, in terms of trying to impact where patients get services and really maybe even change some of the, you know, decision as to whether to stay with the practice or go to a hospital or, you know, other types of business decisions that typically we didn't really see them involved with. What other types of roles are the payers playing? I know you and I talked about the fact that wearable technology, for example, and we just saw telemedicine during COVID, for example, become something that, you know, very quickly, widely acceptable and used. Do you see this as a trend that payers are pushing as well? And is this something that private practices need to pay attention to more than hospitals or vice versa?
I'll say that led by Medicare, the door has been opened to telemedicine and it's not going to be shut. And the same thing with regards to wearables and trying to create, you know, when you think of it, there's all these really, really smart technology people throughout the country that are in this. And there's a lot of really smart people that are trying to design services, wearables, you know, testing services and the like that patients can receive care outside of the, you know, confines of the exam room. And so that is just, there's a tremendous amount of investment that's been made that is, you know, I think will pay off. The payers are actually going to get a little bit cynical on it because they're going to say, huh, is it saving them money or are they just expanding access? You know, so in some ways, I think that if the average American, and it depends upon the payer, but just said, went to a doctor 3 times a year, it'd be interesting now with the advent of telemedicine. And this is kind of where some of the payers are going to go with this. Is it still three visits, you know, three patient exams a year plus now two telemedicine visits, you know, which would just simply lead to higher costs. Another area that has gotten so much investment that, I'm really excited about is I believe we're on the cusp of enabling physician practices to have far better data analytic capabilities and understanding their own information and arming that to their own advantage for once in terms of having larger discussions, whether it be with hospitals, payers, or you know, even employers. And so I think the kind of the insights in terms of kind of where the care is going, what the underlying costs of care are going to be very beneficial for physicians, you know, this level of transparency. But it's not been easy, you know, in healthcare, it's such a complex industry that access to this type of information has largely been kind of limited to very, very large organizations and or the payers. And so I think that this will pay significant dividends and help physicians improve the quality of care, but also improve kind of the, you know, the financial underpinnings or the performance of the practice as well.
So what I'm hearing generally is that there's a lot of good news on the horizon for private practices, that they will continue to do well and to be successful. It's a great option for physicians. A couple of weeks ago, I had a doctor on my podcast and we talked about burnout and how physicians feel burnout. And you know, one of the things we talked about is a lot of that has to do with the employer that we work for, right? The support they provide, the technology they offer, the freedom to, you know, make a schedule or, you know, how much you commute or don't commute, et cetera. Do you think that physician practices are, you know, a better choice for someone who's concerned about burnout? Or do you see in your experience with the different types of clients that you work with that it's more happening at the hospital side of things? I mean, I see kind of a mix.
I see a mix. I wouldn't say that, you know, hospitals have a materially worse problem with physician burnout than private practices or, you know, private equity backed practices. I just think it's, you know, people became physicians to treat patients, you know, to help patients get better. But there's so much bureaucracy and kind of level of cumbersomeness that comes in addition to this. You know, so, you know, generally, I think the advent of this issue with regards to physician burnout really started with the additional documentation times required with electronic medical records. But now, you know, this is a game that never ends, because now insurance companies are you know, sometimes they're denying or pending claims for medical necessity. There's all these different audits. There's a lot of bureaucracy that gets in the way, or it gets in the middle of treating patients. You know, that I think is frustrating. And I don't see that getting better in the short run.
Right.
But I do think, you know, and this is just my own kind of view, I wonder if there's going to be a little bit of a backlash against insurance companies the way there was in the 1990s, you know, the last time we, you know, we had, you know, serious healthcare reform.
I think that's really interesting. I mean, I think that is the number one complaint that I hear from doctors is the bureaucracy and the red tape and the medical records. They feel like they can't be with patients. They're spending so much time typing. And then even after their work day's done, they're working in the evenings and weekends to really complete those records. So I really feel like that's a challenge. And, you know, some groups do it better than others. Some hospitals do better than others. I don't, you know, the burden is there regardless of where you're working. It just kind of makes a difference as to how people are dealing with it.
Right. Do you want to know the vision of the future? This is from a payer, and I think to protect the payer, I'll leave them out. But I thought, oh my God, this is an unbelievable future. And it's to say, imagine that, say, Chad Bestie is treated by a physician. The documentation is made in the electronic medical record. And that's it. That's all the practice does. The insurance company at night has access to, you know, not to, to make changes to the system, to the, you know, doctor's EMR, but they can go in and grab the documentation for the service. You know, why did Chad Bestie come in? What services were provided that relate to that? And frankly, process a claim without ever, you know, having the practice submit a claim. So payment, you know, really by the insurance company using the EMR. Now, on the one hand, you'd say that is really cool. That is exciting. That is going to cut a lot of operating costs for the physician practices. On the other hand, is to say, what makes them, you know, the be-all, end-all of coding? How do we know that they will do a good job? And boy, is it really scary if, you know, the insurance company has access to all my records. You know, right. So there's, it's in, on the one hand, it's kind of like exciting. It's you know, it would be something innovative and it could reduce problems. But on the other hand, you know, there's some concerns that I would have before I would open up my electronic medical records to insurance companies. So,
well, I think it would take a certain level of accuracy in writing those notes in the first place. So the practice themselves would need to know how it was going to end up being coded to make sure it had everything in it, which could be a plus or minus. I don't know that it gets rid of like the prior authorization type issue either. But it's interesting because even with the open notes that just came out where people have access immediately, I'm hearing from my clients how they're being very careful now about how they're writing their notes. So we're maybe already headed down that road of you know, access to notes immediately and how they need to be right, you know, which puts this maybe an additional burden on doctors, you know, but could perhaps at the end of the day ease some of that, you know, administrative hurdle that's on them. So I guess one of the final questions I want to ask, and I know you and I both do a lot of M&A, and you've mentioned here that you see the trend, you know, really continuing, where we're seeing consolidation of hospitals as well as groups. We're seeing still seeing super groups as well as we are seeing private practices continuing to be acquired by private equity. What do you see as the trend? Is this going to go on? Are you seeing groups backing out? Are you seeing people leave private equity and start up new groups? What are you seeing in your space?
Well, to me, for the next couple of years, private equity is going to continue to be a major player, in part because there's a number of larger physician practices that are very interested in this. But the other part is, and this happened really kind of pre-pandemic, there's a lot of private equity firms that raised significant levels of capital. You know, so there's some local private equity firms that say raised $2 billion and now they have 3 years to invest it. They're going to invest these dollars, you know, and, right. And everyone thought that, say, you know, bank debt would get hard to receive, but there's so much money in healthcare that, you know, frankly, BDO is going to, this is going to set a record for BDO. The most transactions we've ever done will be in 2021, despite this pandemic, and a very high percentage of it is actually physician practices. Do I think it's the wave of the future? It's going to be one, you know, but I guess and maybe it's because I'm getting old. I think that there's going to be successful physicians that work for hospitals, for private practices, you know, and or, you know, where they work for a private practice, but the private equity firm owns the management company or the MSO. So I think that there can be success in all these different models. And a part of it is, you know, what's right for, you know, your individual client or, you know, my individual client and, you know, and the like. There is one thing though, that I think that it's, does give kind of pause for concern is to say that I tend to find a lot of private practice physicians spending an inordinate amount of time about internal matters. How are we splitting up compensation? You know, the expenses here. And what the observation is whether it's private equity backed or hospitals are really kind of spending their time, how do we better compete? How do we grow? How do we increase market share? And what I worry for some private practices is that they're too internally focused because, you know, if practice A is kind of fighting about money and practice B is trying to grow, I kind of think practice B is going to be more successful because they're focused on things that generate success. And so, you know, the one thing that I would share with any private, you know, physician that works for private practice is let's try to focus on you know, growing the practice rather than, you know, fighting on internal matters all the time.
Great. I think that's really good insight. And you're right, a lot of practices. And I think, you know, some of that comes from having good advisors, though. I think with doctors trying to do a lot on their own, they spin their wheels. But there are people out there with the expertise that can help, you know, simplify some of the challenges that they're facing and give them that opportunity to devote their time and effort to growing, as you suggest. So, well, thank you so much for joining today. I think this is really insightful. We hope you'll come back again and we can talk about some other topics related to healthcare. Thank you everyone for joining us on the Health Law Hotspot. And we'll see you back here next time. You can find out more about RETSL at ralaw.com and see our other podcasts there as well. Thanks so much. See you next time.
Thank you.
RETSL Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the RETSL Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.